I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about the proposed cigarette tax hike the Indiana General Assembly is considering. We'll discuss where it stands and what it would do. My guests are Brian Hannon with the American Cancer Society's Cancer Action Network, Fairbanks School of Public Health Dean Paul Halverson, and Indiana Minority Health Coalition's Tony Gillespie. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email nolimits at WFYI.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking about a cigarette tax hike. The Indiana General Assembly is considering there's a measure before the state legislature right now. We're going to talk about where it stands and what it would do and the reasoning behind it. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Brian Hannon with the American Cancer Society's Cancer Action Network, Fairbanks School of Public Health Dean Paul Halverson, and Indiana Minority Health Coalition's Tony Gillespie. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. Thank you.
Certainly, I guess in Tony's case, it's actually welcome back since he's evacuated
right.
the program.
Right.
But good to have you all here. So first, let's talk about what the measure is right now that is before the state legislature, what it would do, and then we'll broaden the conversation out from there. I'm going to go with Brian because he's looking at me right now.
Sure. Well, there have been several tobacco-related bills filed this session in the General Assembly, but the one that is most broadly supported by our coalition and the one that we think has the most impact on public health and on smoking rates has been filed in the House, and that would include a $2 cigarette tax increase and dedicating part of the revenue back into tobacco prevention and cessation programs. And that's the bill we continue to talk with lawmakers about and push that issue after four sessions, we're hopeful that we can get it across the finish line this year.
Yeah, and to be specific, what it would do is, I think, if I recall correctly, bump the tax, which is currently at a little bit less than a dollar, up to just under $3.
Correct.
And all of that. Why is this a good idea, Tony?
Well, specifically from an Indiana Minority Health Coalition perspective, when you look at the amount that's spent on public health, it's not a whole lot in Indiana. We're one of the states with the lowest per capita that we spend on public health. So this tax would generate millions of dollars that could then go back into public health and not only address smoking cessation, as Brian said, but some of the other serious health disparities that we deal with every year. Infant mortality is a huge issue still. Cancers. We've had some conversation about making some of the funds, and it's not if the tax is passed, when the tax is passed, making funds available to look at workforce development. There are just a number of issues that could be addressed through this tobacco tax, and it makes sense.
Paul, I'm going to ask you really about, I'm assuming part of the reason, too, is in addition to being a revenue enhancer, at least part of what's going on here is you want to add to the disincentives for
right.
people to
I
smoke.
Mean, that's exactly right, John. I think one of the most important things to sort of mention is the fact that if we look at Indiana in so many ways, we're very progressive. We've got great growth, terrific a business environment. But if you look at health, we really lag. In fact, this year we actually went down in the ratings. We were ranked at 38th in the nation for health, which is not great, but we went back to 41st, 41st in the nation for our overall health. The biggest single cause of that backsliding, if you will, is actually related to our tobacco use.
Right.
Indiana has the 44th highest tobacco use rate. It is the greatest cause of preventable death in our state. Over 11,200 people a year die unnecessarily because of tobacco use. So if you want to look at what's driving our poor health, you only really need to look at tobacco. And the reason why the tobacco tax is so important, it's not really – and again, I agree with Tony. I mean, we're ranked 48th in terms of our contribution to public health. And again, so there, that means that there's only two other states that are that fund public health worse than Indiana. But even more important, the tried and true way to reduce tobacco in this nation is to raise the price of the product. So raising the price of the product means increasing the tax. But you know what? Frankly, it's more a user fee. Because remember, if we look at the number of people who smoke cigarettes, it's only one in five. It's about 21, almost 22%, which is extremely high compared to other states. But 80% of the people in this state don't smoke. We're talking about raising the price of the product so it will create a disincentive for people to smoke. And, you know, the reality is most people want to stop. Current smokers surveyed consistently would over 70% of the people who are smoking want to stop. This is not something they want to continue. And especially if we can raise the price, that creates another really strong reason for them to quit. So this, in reality, the primary public health reason to raise the price is not to raise money for the government, but to encourage the people to quit smoking.
Real quickly, and I'll take this from anyone, you know, just so we've got the parameters of this, because I want to pick up on this larger thing that we're question we're talking about. How much money would be raised if this cigarette tax hike went through? It looks like everybody is looking in Brian's direction here, so
yeah,
I assume you'll get that one.
We do have estimates on this that the campaign has produced, and our estimate is a $2 per pack increase in the cigarette tax rate would generate about $360 million in the very first year. Over a five-year period, that approaches $2 billion in new revenue, so $1.7 billion over the next 5 years. Now, there are slightly higher estimates produced by the Legislative Services Agency inside the State House, but we're intentionally conservative on our revenue estimates because, as Paul's mentioned, we see this primarily as a way to reduce smoking rates, and the revenue it produces is kind of the cherry on top that we could reinvest into public health programs. So the revenue is an important piece, but we don't want policymakers to be attracted to this as a solution only to revenue issues, but also as a driver of improving public health.
Well, and in theory, if it works as it should, and the cigarette tax hike does work as a disincentive, that $360 million per year is going to decrease because people will be buying fewer cigarettes.
But it'll decrease slower than you might imagine, actually, much to our chagrin. We know that the tobacco tax will create a disincentive. But there are people that say, well, you know, this is something we can't rely on because it's just going to go down to zero and this problem's going to go away. Unfortunately, it won't go away. So there needs to be we can count on the fact that the tobacco tax revenue will go down, but it will go down very slowly. And that's, again, because the price alone will not eliminate tobacco use. The one other thing that's really important to mention is that if we look at the amount of money that Indiana spends on tobacco prevention and cessation, it's a paltry sum in comparison to the tobacco settlement. Over $300 million a year comes into Indiana from the tobacco companies from the master settlement. We spend just a little over $7 million. CDC recommends, based upon their best scientific evidence, that for a population the size of Indiana, we should be spending in excess of $70 million a year. We're spending seven. less than a tenth, really, of what we should be spending.
And to just to clarify for those who don't speak public health on a regular basis, CDC stands for Centers for Disease
Centers for Disease Control. Right. Thank you.
Okay. So let me ask then, if this were to move through the legislature, and I understand that is a big if right now, where would it place Indiana in terms of tax rates for tobacco use? I think we're at 44th, right?
Fourth highest in smoking.
I thought I saw somewhere too. We had the 44th lowest cigarette taxes.
Currently, our cigarette tax rate hovers around 40th. It's low 30s or high 40s in terms of where we rank in the country for our tax rate.
Okay.
If we were to increase it by $2 as we're proposing, it launches us into the top 15, top 12, something like that, of states' cigarette tax rate. So,
what state has the highest?
New York, I believe, has the highest.
New York, and is there a direct correlation? I mean, do we see that they're number one in the tax rate for cigarettes? They have the lowest smoking rate in the country. Is it a direct?
There's a number of, tobacco control policy has to be done in conjunction. There's a number of evidence-based practices you have to pursue. The first is a significant cigarette tax increase. So some folks may wonder why we've asked for a $2 increase in the cigarette tax rate. It's because after decades of evidence of states doing this, we've seen that it has to be significant in order to work. A 25 or 50 cent cigarette tax increase really does not affect the consumer, and it's easily offsetted by the tobacco industry. So the first step is to do a significant tax increase, and then you have to have things like a strong smoke-free air law, and you have to have, as Paul's mentioned, adequate funding for your tobacco prevention and cessation programs. And if you do all of these things in concert, it really drives down aggressively the smoking rate.
Now, is there, and I'll throw this one to Tony, is there a point, though, I mean, I'm assuming you want the full $2 if you can get it, and you will not. It sounds like 25 or 50 cents is not worth the time or effort, but that still leaves about $1.50 by my math in between for negotiation. Mm-hmm. Is that something that is worth considering and would be put on the table?
Ideally, $2 would be the best option. And just, we have to be considered. We have to be open to some negotiation, but we've been pretty firm and consistent that $2, and the science supports it. Our federal partners, when they do the actuary on the calculations, $2 is the perfect fit for a state in the size of Indiana, and we'll be competitive with some of our neighbors. Chicago has a significantly higher tax, but immediately in the first couple of years, they saw a decrease in smoking with youth, and they mounted a very aggressive clean air campaign. So $2.
Okay. $2, same from both of you, that
yes.
It's really non-negotiable? Or?
Well, the issue, there's a linear relationship. I mean, in other words, the higher the rate, the more the impact. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's about a 10% increase in the tax will decrease smoking by 3-5%. So we know that based upon the research, that in Indiana, the tobacco companies spend nearly $300 million a year marketing and advertising, plus their political contributions, to increase the influence so that, in fact, we are smoking. And the reality is that a big part of that marketing budget could be spent on price rebate coupons. So if you set up a 75 cent tax, they could put a coupon in the mail, and they are very sophisticated in being able to get those coupons to their smokers. So the reality is, unless you have a very significant tax, it will be blunted by the industry, who will be able to rebate that. And now all of a sudden, we haven't really had an impact.
So let me reframe this question in another way. Is $2 really the minimum for effectiveness, Brian?
Yeah, I think, Indiana has a number of health crises, and our tobacco crisis is certainly first and foremost of those, and it's a big driver of many of our other health problems. We have more than 600 babies that die every year in the state in our infant mortality crisis. We last year set a record for the number of drug overdose deaths. We have, as Paul mentioned earlier, 11,000 people lose their lives to tobacco-related illness every year in the state. These are crisis-level numbers, and they really require significant and bold policy solutions. It's not time for half measures. And that is really the message that we have to send to lawmakers, is that it's time to take Indiana's public health seriously and enact a full-fledged policy campaign to address these issues.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the proposed cigarette tax hike that is before the Indiana General Assembly this session. If you want to join the conversation, you can give us a call at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You also can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Brian Hannon. He's with the American Cancer Society's Cancer Action Network, Fairbanks School of Public Health Dean Paul Halverson, and the Indiana Minority Health Coalition's Tony Gillespie. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please, stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about the proposed cigarette tax hike that's before the Indiana General Assembly this session. My guests are Brian Hannon. He is with the American Cancer Society's Cancer Action Network, Fairbanks School of Public Health Dean Paul Halverson, and Indiana Minority Health Coalition's Tony Gillespie. If you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can do what a listener did and reach out to us via Twitter. You can find us there at WFYI. This listener writes, "Interesting. Heart disease is the number one killer in America, Indiana, yet we don't tax meat, dairy, oils. In fact, we subsidize them. How does this make sense, Paul?"
Well, the writer is correct that heart disease actually is the major disease state. But we need to really go back to say, so what is the behavior? So we know that substantial amount of disease is actually on based upon behavior, and we know that the leading cause of death of heart disease is actually related to tobacco use. So that's why tobacco is so important. The other reality is nobody needs to smoke to live. You need to eat to live. And so it's not taking away the fact that we have a major obesity problem in our state and around this in this country. So in fact, we do need to eat better. We need to exercise more. We need to do all those things that would reduce our risk factor for heart disease and stroke. The fact of the matter is, the leading behavior, which we know is so conclusively linked with bad health, is related to tobacco use.
We're talking about the proposed cigarette tax before the Indiana General Assembly right now. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Paul has done and call us at 866-476-3881. Paul, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm sitting here listening to it, and, you know, they're doing all this work to discourage smoking, and I don't know why they don't focus their energy toward legislation. I mean, if it's this big problem, why not work on legislation to make tobacco products illegal? Said and done.
Thanks very much for the call and the question. I'll see if I can get an answer for you.
Okay.
Tony, I'll start with you.
That has never occurred to me. I think that would be such a huge undertaking that I can't even see us getting any traction in making tobacco illegal. But it could be said that a step in that direction is to make it less attainable, I think.
Well, and it does seem, correct me if I'm wrong, but we're seeing, like with marijuana laws changing around the country too, that there seems to be at least some consideration for the fact that outright prohibition doesn't really work all
right.
That effectively. It creates a huge underground market, and at least this way you create a mechanism for dealing with you know, with the problems that that the use of the addiction brings with it. But Brian, you were leaning in like you wanted to say something here.
Well, sure. You know, we have more than a million Hoosiers who are addicted to tobacco. And many of these smokers started before the age of 21. And so to the caller's point, I think where we have to focus, and to Tony's point, where we have to focus our energy is keeping kids away from this product and making sure we're not addicting a new generation of smokers. And if we can keep them away until the age of 21 or after, we know that there's a very high likelihood that they'll never pick up the product and become addicted. So, you know, in the meantime, we have to do what we can to fund cessation programs in the state to help smokers who want to quit smoking to actually quit. They need the support to do it. So I think there's ways that we can drastically and dramatically continue to cut down Indiana's smoking rate and besides making it an illegal product.
We had a call from a listener who didn't want to go on the air. Similar in theme, says smoking taxes should be higher than $2 a pack. And she wants us really to discuss the effects of smoking on others, not just those who smoke secondhand smoke. And also wanted us to discuss the question we just did, whether it should be banned altogether. Brian, I'll stay with you. Can we talk a bit about the effects of secondhand smoke?
Well, they're big, and that's another thing that makes a tobacco product unique compared to some of these other consumer products that folks are worried about, whether it be meat or soda or sugar or something like that, because the secondhand smoke has serious health effects for the people who are around it. And that's why we've seen people who work in facilities that have a lot of smoking have higher disease rates than other smokers. Babies, and even whether they've been delivered or in utero, are subjected to secondhand or to the effects of smoke when their mother smokes. So tobacco use isn't just a threat to the user. It's a threat to those around them as well. And so it's very unique in that regard, and I think it requires a unique level of attention from policymakers.
Go ahead, Tony.
I was just going to add that every couple of years, a new level of negative health impact, a new study comes out every couple of years. So secondhand smoke, smoking around children, smoking around pets, public smoking. Every couple of years there's new evidence that proves that this is bad. It's detrimental. It causes a ton of health issues. And as Dr. Halverson said, you don't have to smoke to live. And the opposition to this is just, as a non-smoker, it's just amazing to me that, you know, rather than we come together and make some decisions about how to decrease the number of smokers, how to not addict a whole new generation, these are things that are logical and make sense.
But, you know, the other thing to think about, actually, John, is related to the overall cost. So if you take away the human health issues and you just say, well, let's look at the cost, we've calculated that for every pack of cigarettes sold in our state, over $15.90 in health care and lost productivity occurs. That's you know, there's no way in the world we're going to make this up in volume, obviously. I mean, the reality is that this is a $7 billion problem. So if we look at just the annual health care costs related to smoking, that's direct smoking as well as secondhand smoke, almost $3 billion. Medicaid costs over $589 million. The annual cost to state and federal tax burden for an Indiana household is almost $1,000 a year. And if we look at the cost to business, it's enormous. $3.2 billion a year is the cost to business. It's some of the folks have actually done a calculation to suggest that being a smoker actually costs the employer almost 3 weeks of additional vacation a year in terms of productivity lost. So that's not just the choice that the smoker's making. It's the cost that is forced on the employer and those people that are around those that are smoking. So it really is an enormous cost, and it's actually a hidden tax. We all pay for this.
How much of this is also going to be about changing sort of, and we've done an awful lot of it, but sort of cultural cues, cultural pressures involved in this. I'm remembering a story my father told me. He's a World War II era vet. He talked about the number of guys who took up smoking when they went into the armed services because, if you smoked, you got a 5-minute smoke break every hour on the hour.
Right.
If you didn't smoke, you didn't get the break. So, the bright ones among them figured, okay, if I don't want to keep working around the clock, basically, I need to at least start smoking a little bit. And, the expectation then was that from the tobacco companies is that you would continue.
Right.
Once you acquired the habit, you would.
Well, in fact, if you remember, actually, the government included cigarettes in the rations to the military. Mm-hmm. So, this has been, as you said, this is a culture change. We now know more than ever that if we can reduce or eliminate tobacco use, we can improve dramatically the health of the population. And that ultimately improves the quality of life for everyone, the smoker and everyone around them.
Gotten an email from a listener named Matt. Again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Matt writes, have your speakers looked into how this $2 tobacco tax would disproportionately affect the lower class? Personally, I'm not for a sin tax as a behavior deterrent, but I will defer to the research. Start with Tony on that one.
I think as Brian mentioned in his opening comments that we're 4 years into mounting this effort to increase the tobacco tax. In the beginning, from a minority health perspective, we were not fully supportive because of the very thing that the concern was that if the tobacco tax would raise, minority communities would be hit the hardest. But with each year, and again, I mentioned the studies and the health information that comes out and some of the great information that Dr. Halverson has shared, overwhelmingly, this is a major, smoking is a major contributor to every health disparity or every chronic health condition there is. And so while the tobacco tax will affect low-income, minority, poor communities, so will the decrease in smoking. So as Dr. Halverson said, for the dollar amount that we spend, that we see a decrease in 3 to 5% over a year, multiple years. So if the minority community or low-income communities are hardest hit, will be hardest hit with the tax, then they'll be the ones that will
get the greatest benefit.
They'll stop smoking.
Is there a way also, and I'll throw this to either Brian or Paul, whichever one wants to take it, is there also a way to, well, or Tony for that matter, anybody can weigh in on this one. Is there a way, given that at least initially there likely would be that $360 million of revenue coming in, to make sure that that is on the back end disproportionately targeted toward poorer citizens here in Indiana? Brian's nodding his head, so I'm going with him first. But Tony was nodding too. I'll give you a bite at it.
I'm just an honor.
Okay. All right, Brian.
Yeah. Well, we've identified several gaps in Indiana's public health programs that need additional revenue, whether it's access to care issues in our Medicaid program, whether it's our ongoing fight with addiction issues in the state and needs a long-term treatment framework to be set up in the state. Infant mortality, I think, is an ongoing concern that requires additional revenue. So those are some of the things that we've talked to lawmakers about. If you're going to do this, which you should, and you see $360+ million in revenue, these should go back into health programs that address needs that often do affect communities of color or lower income folks in the state. But, I think there's a couple of ways to look at it, and Paul mentioned this, is there's a cost to a smoker, but there's also the benefit of a smoker.
Mm-hmm.
It's been mentioned a couple of times that more than 70% of smokers report that they want to quit smoking. And that's especially true amongst black smokers in the state. The State Department of Health actually has data that shows that 90% of black smokers in Indiana have reported wanting to quit, and 75% have made a quit attempt in the last year. So I think we should shift the narrative around this, and it's not so much punitive as we are trying to do things that can help people kick this addiction that they most likely came across and picked up when they were a kid. And they need help to get there. And so we can do it by raising the tax and then reinvesting that money into programs that will support them in their improving their health.
Yeah, go ahead, Paul.
There really is an ethical issue here, too. I mean, there are some states that have said, oh, yeah, we're going to raise the tax. But you must at the same time you raise the tax and make it more difficult, particularly for lower income people and kids who get the greatest benefit from the tax increase. You must provide the opportunity and the help to support them quit, which actually goes to the point you were making, John. And if we look at the people who are most susceptible to the tax, the greatest benefit actually goes to lower income people, particularly those that are below poverty line, and kids. So if you can definitely have a program designed specifically to help that population, targeted at that population, it seems only fair, because, you know, we've actually, the Polis Center has done some recent research here in Indiana looking at the marketing effect, and we now know, based upon that research, that there's a disproportionate marketing efforts made to lower income and particularly minority populations. The lower the income, the greater the minority population, the more specific targeted marketing occurs. So it would only make sense that we really focus and have a specific targeted marketing effect for that population.
Tony.
And I think where we are in this year, in this version of our effort, is that overwhelmingly more and more Hoosiers across the state, race and ethnicity, are supportive of the idea of a tobacco tax.
Isn't it like 70%?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that's very different than when we first started this effort.
And that support is pretty consistent, stable. Mm-hmm. We have done polling on this issue over the last few years, but other third-party entities as well, media organizations. And it's not uncommon at all to find 65 to 70% support amongst Hoosier voters for a significant cigarette tax increase, especially if we're dedicating some of that revenue back to prevention efforts.
We've got an email from a listener named Ben, a regular listener. Again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Ben writes, when No Limits last discussed a tobacco tax hike back in December 2016, Ben, I am impressed that you are archiving the shows here. I wrote in and asked if there was any data showing how much revenue Indiana pulled from its tobacco tax and if your panelists knew how much of that revenue went towards funding anti-tobacco initiatives. The guest panelists didn't know then. Do your current panelists know now? I'm firmly anti-tobacco, but even I think that it's disingenuous to raise taxes on tobacco under the banner of improving health when no one knows whether the revenue coming in from those taxes even goes toward combating tobacco use. Brian?
Well, about $7.5 million is appropriated each year to the state's Tobacco Prevention and Cessation Program. And it says, as has been referenced earlier in the program, that's only about 10% of what the Centers for Disease Control recommends.
The other part of Ben's question was, do we know how much currently comes in from the slightly less than a dollar tobacco tax?
Well, the state, I don't have an exact figure. I believe the state sees more than $500 million in revenue between both its tax on tobacco products, but also its revenue from the master settlement agreement. So when you compare what we're currently spending on prevention and cessation efforts in the state to what we collect each and every year, even without a $2 increase that we're advocating for, it's paltry. It's laughable. So to the emailer's point, I think we need to improve the proportion of that revenue that we're directing to prevention and cessation.
Yeah, I'm with Ben, by the way. I think he's right. We're stingy when it comes to the support.
Right. And I'd like to add that all of our health programs primarily come out of the master tobacco settlement, which over the years have decreased. So there's no other, and I don't want to keep harping on the money, but that's an important part of it. You can't combat, you can't adequately address public health without resources.
We are talking about the proposed cigarette tax hike the Indiana General Assembly is considering this session. If you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can email nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. My guests are Brian Hannon with the American Cancer Society's Cancer Action Network, Fairbanks School of Public Health Dean Paul Halverson, and Indiana Minority Health Coalition's Tony Gillespie. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about the proposed cigarette tax hike the Indiana General Assembly is considering. My guests are Brian Hannon with the American Cancer Society's Cancer Action Network, Fairbanks School of Public Health Dean Paul Halverson, and Indiana Minority Health Coalition's Tony Gillespie. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener who did not want to go on the air did. Give us a call at 866-476-3881. This listener asked a question. He said he has heard a lot about juuling and raising the age of other tobacco products across the nation. Can the guests talk more about the tax as the best way to prevent people from smoking, or is there a more effective way, and are we... You know, would this also affect some of these other products? Because obviously, juuling and other forms of smoking have come into play recently, Paul.
Well, I'll take the first part of the question, which relates to is this the best way? We know the science is clear. Study after study over the last 30 years have strongly recommended and demonstrated the effectiveness of increasing the price of the product. So there's no question that increasing the price of the product, usually through a tax increase, will actually decrease smoking in the state. We know that for sure. We can take that to the bank. The reality is what we lack is the political will to implement what science says will work. As it relates to juuling and, again, what we recognize is that there is at least one component which we know a lot about, and that's nicotine. And mm-hmm. those devices are nicotine delivery devices. We know that in the young evolving brain especially, that they have a deleterious effect. And we know that that those devices are very effective mechanisms by which to deliver these chemicals, which we don't know fully the impact on the human body. What we know, at least the component parts, are not good. It's clear enough that the FDA is taking action to move towards restricting use and increasing their surveillance on these products.
We've gotten a couple of comments, questions. One by email from a listener named Catherine. Another from a listener via Twitter. And again, if you want to join the conversation by email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. On Twitter, you can find us at WFYI. But they're really asking, I'm going to take the liberty of trying to synthesize these questions about whether this discussion is broad enough. Catherine writes one about really the fact that like cigarette filters end up in the sewers and end up polluting the water. The listener on Twitter talks about why are we focusing just on sort of prevention of this kind of behavior, and why not, trying to create a discussion about just making healthier choices in general, eliminating food deserts, and encouraging people to take, a healthier approach to life. I'll start with Brian on that one because he's making eye contact, but I can tell Tony wants a piece of it too.
Well, I think that's a brilliant idea, and it's much needed in Indiana. We need a much broader and ongoing conversation about public health. But I think what we have to keep in mind with tobacco is we now have decades upon decades of evidence of what works in reducing this challenge. Some of the other challenges we see in this state are critical, and they need our attention, and they need our investment. But perhaps that's going to require some trial and error. It's going to require us to see what works to address some of these things. But tobacco is very unique in that it's killing the leading cause of preventable death, killing 11,000 people in the state. And we know how to fix it. As Paul has mentioned, we just lack the political will to actually do something about it. And if we lack the political will to actually do something about tobacco, how are we going to actually tackle some of these other challenges that the emailer has talked about? So I think, yes, we need a comprehensive discussion about health, but let's get the low-hanging fruit and then see where we can go from there.
Tony.
Absolutely. And in terms of lacking the political will, the last 3 years we've had mounted efforts to create some sort of healthy food access program where we can make funds available for communities that have limited access, no grocery stores, to have better access to healthier food products. We looked at the food desert issue and how to combat that. We have a National Diabetes Prevention Program that's all based on lifestyle change. So those initiatives are out there, but I think lack political will is going to be burned in my head, you know, because that's where we are in so many of these things. And Brian is absolutely right. This we know beyond a shadow of a doubt. It's not trial and error. We know that the tobacco issue can be combated through raising the tobacco tax and comprehensive clean air legislation, and that works.
So we've talked about the political. Where is the pushback coming from on this? Where are, you know, is the opposition to increasing the tax? Because, you know, let's be clear. The bill was assigned to committee, I think, on January 17th, if I recall correctly. Mm-hmm. Hasn't had a hearing since. And I'm gathering there isn't much likelihood that it will get one. Obviously, when things like that happen, those of us who've been around the political process know that there's a lot of muscle being exerted to bottle something up, particularly if the polls indicate that they're supporting it. It would put legislators in a very bad position to have to vote against something that's popular if it made it to the floor. Brian.
Well, you know, it can be a complicated sometimes in that we just have general inertia in the state house from some folks who don't feel an urgency about health issues. Mm-hmm. Perhaps they don't feel comfortable playing a role in addressing those. I think it's outside of their scope as policymakers to help people make healthier and better decisions. Some folks, it's a fear of the T word, attacks. But, you know, I think as has been mentioned, this public support for this is pretty stable and pretty strong. And then, of course, there are also powers at play that are not always seen. We know that the tobacco industry does have influence, and that's why they have been very successful at not only addicting many generations to this product, but keeping them addicted and weakening tobacco control efforts that do get proposed. So sometimes it's a myriad of things that we have to fight and address. But what the point that I think has to continue to resonate and that we have to make with lawmakers is that they must feel urgency about some of these health crises. And we got to start with tobacco, and then we can start to address some of these other issues with some of the revenue that we have, whether it's diabetes or healthy food access or infant mortality.
I think actually the polling demonstrates that voters are more likely to reelect someone who actually votes for this tax.
Absolutely.
Which I think is really telling, and I think it's important to recognize. You know, it's interesting because sometimes we think about taxes as not being consistent with a conservative position, but the reality is not raising the price of tobacco in Indiana is not a conservative position at all. It actually increases the risk of people dying and actually sentences people to a miserable quality of life and $7 billion a year in cost. It seems to me that's not a very conservative position at all, especially because we know that raising the price works. It's scientifically solid. You can take it to the bank. What we lack is the ability to say we're going to stand up and do the right thing for the people in Indiana in terms of improving their health.
We've gotten an email from a listener named Andre and then a tweet from a listener via Twitter. Our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Twitter is WFYI. And I'm going to try to synthesize these because we are starting to get tight on time. They deal sort of with the questions of mitigating the effect on low-income Hoosiers and how they could be hit. And the tweet in particular says, is it possible to change this to tax the companies of the tobacco products but not the purchaser. Low-income folks are hurting, and new taxes will hurt more. They are addicted, after all. Is there a way to do this, to just increase the cost of doing business with this particular product? Paul, you're leaning in.
So if we what we can do is look at the last time the federal tax increased, and back in 2009, they looked at to see who paid that increase. And the reality is that those below poverty line only paid 11.9% of the overall dollar increase. If you look at the benefit, over 46% of the benefit, that is to say those people that either quit smoking or reduced their smoking significantly, those are the people that benefited. So the reality is that the problem with taxing the corporation more, which is not necessarily a bad idea, but it won't change the behavior of the people making the choice to smoke. And so the reality is it has to be more cost so that people will make a second thought around, gee, maybe I should quit smoking. I mean, if you look at New York, for example, with the tax over $10 a pack, mm-hmm. people do think twice before they smoke.
Is there a way, though, and I want to follow the spirit of the question, since at least the marketing of these products is at least part of the problem, to dedicate the tax toward the marketing of cigarettes or in some ways to achieve the same effects and discourage consumption from the supply side rather than the demand side?
Well, Ryan. You know, the Master Settlement Agreement is, in effect, a tax, right? A penalty, if you will, mm-hmm. on the manufacturers for their many years of misleading and lying and egregiously addicting folks to this product. I think, you know, the challenge with going after the supply side rather than the consumer side is ultimately these price increases get passed on to consumers. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Via the manufacturer or the retailer, but they're very savvy with that. They know how to keep consumers addicted. A few cents here, a few cents years later, a few years later, and consumers are able to absorb those price increases pretty handily, right? So I think the effectiveness of a cigarette tax increase comes from the shock value. That's why it has to be a significant increase to the consumer, so that they have the shock value and quit smoking or begin to reduce their consumption.
And I think we're also underestimating the desire on the part of underserved communities, minorities, rural communities, low income. We're underestimating their desire to want to stop smoking. And, you know, trying to find a workaround for that, then we're not serving the community. So if we have people who want to stop smoking, we have to be able to provide effective programming and counter-marketing to address that. So I think sometimes we underestimate the drive and the commitment on the part of community in addressing some of these health issues.
Got a Facebook message from a listener named Brandon who says he quit almost 3 weeks ago, so he doesn't have a dog in this fight. But any news on cigar tax hike, alcohol tax, or a vape tax? And secondly, what about a person's right to choose or have the freedom to choose? I'll go with you.
Well, I think one of the issues that's really important is what we talked about earlier, the secondhand effect. So if the individual lived 100 miles away from anyone else in the world and they smoked, I guess at that point, let them do it. But the reality is people are smoking around others. There is a secondhand effect. Those people didn't ask for that effect. There's a huge cost to secondhand smoke. There is cost related to the medical care costs that we're all paying, the productivity losses in business. So it's not an individual choice that people are making and saying, I'm going to take all of those costs on my own. The reality is we know in tobacco, the cost makes a huge difference. And whether it's tobacco in cigarettes or tobacco in cigars, this works. And so as we look at other countries, they have also found ways in which to use taxes to influence alcohol purchases mm-hmm. as well. But again, our focus today right now, because it is the leading cause of preventable death in our state, is increasing the cost of the tobacco product. and other things can wait, I think, at this point.
So let me add, since we are getting tight on time here and are getting close, that, you know, the bill has been introduced on the House side, and it was assigned to committee on January 17th, I believe, as I said, and has not moved since then. At what point do you start looking at Plan B, and what would Plan B look like, Brian?
Well, I don't want to get too inside baseball for listeners, but I would say that the House of Representatives has passed a significant cigarette tax increase a couple of times in the last few years. So they've gone on record. They've done this. I think what we have to continue to do is call on the governor and call on the state Senate to do the same thing, to be willing to have a full and robust debate about this issue and to increase the price of cigarettes. There's a long way to go in this legislative session. It's a budget year in Indiana, which means that we've got to put together a spending bill in this state, and every issue is going to be alive until the very end, especially revenue-raising measures like a cigarette tax increase, I think, will be alive until the very end. Our job, and what I would encourage listeners to do as well who feel strongly about this issue, is to continue having conversations with policymakers and let them know this really cannot wait. Kicking this can down the road means that you're kicking a lot of other health issues down the road, whether it's our opioid issues or infant mortality issues and things like that. So we've got to communicate the urgency of this issue and make sure that we're not delaying another 2 years.
If people do have been listening to this program and are so moved to try to interact with legislators on either side of the question, what's the best way to go about that, Tony?
Well, contact both your Senate representative and your House representative would be the first thing, and advocate for the tax. On February 19th, we have our Raise It for Health Day at the State House. And then on March 13th, the Indiana Minority Health Coalition has a Minority Health Day. And these are certainly minority health issues. It's just important that – so we have the poll. We have the evidence that this works, the poll that people – Hoosier supported. We have to convey that to our legislators. And that – you can't say it too many times.
I would also invite listeners to go to raiseitforhealthin.com, and they can sign up there to stay in touch on this issue and find out ways to take action. And then smokinghurtsourworkforce.com is a URL that we've put together to demonstrate some of those economic costs that Paul has talked about throughout the program.
Mm-hmm. And I think that probably will have to be the last word. I'd like to thank my three guests, Brian Hannon with the American Cancer Society's Cancer Action Network, Fairbanks School of Public Health Dean Paul Halverson, and Indiana Minority Health Coalition's Tony Gillespie, for what has been a lively and provocative conversation about this subject. Also, I'd like to thank our listeners. As usual, some of the best questions come from them in comments. It's great to do this show for the smartest audience in radio. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producers, Sarah Neil Estes, Roxana Caldwell, and Jill Sheridan. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Emily Matheny screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.